This is Fiscal Therapy, the podcast where leaders in accounting share their secrets to success. I'm your host, Jodie Sitters, Community Manager at MYOB for our accounting partners. In this series, we will chat to expert guests who will provide real-life examples to help you build a successful practice. Welcome to Fiscal Therapy. Today's guest is so well known in practice space, she almost needs no introduction. She's a fellow chartered accountant. She started and ran her own practice for 18 years. She successfully sold her practice. She's been one of the top 50 women in accounting, not once, but twice. She mentors, she consults, she speaks, and she's an advocate for SMEs. For the last 6 years, she has grown her new business, where she is a business coach for accounting and professional service firms. So a very, very warm welcome to Amanda Gascoigne.
Thanks so much, Jodie, for having me. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to chatting to you this afternoon.
Same here. I love this. It's really good that we've finally got together. So I wanted to start with your practice. You were in practice for 18 years. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to know more about how you started, how you grew mm-hmm. your practice, and you know mm-hmm. the ins and outs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, I started my practice in 1999, so a big year just before the GST came in. And the reason why I started my practice is that I wanted to start a family, and where I was working, there was no maternity leave policy. So I figured I would back myself and head out on my own. So I started my practice from my home. And, you know, in those days, having a home-based business was something you sort of did on the side, not something you did as a full-time job, and certainly not a chartered accounting practice. We all thought they were in the beautiful big buildings. And so it was actually very unique back then. And I guess the way that I grew it was just all organically, all word of mouth. We didn't have the internet to be advertising like we do these days. Didn't have social media. So as far as the growth of that, it was just all word of mouth. And because I was having clients coming to my home, I sort of didn't want to do a whole heap of advertising as well. So I think in that whole 18 years, I would have been lucky to spend $5,000 on marketing. Wow. A little entry, one line entry in the yellow pages was pretty much all I had. And I did splurge and go under the section for chartered accountants. So people, you know, saw me in a couple of sections. But as far as actually growing it, like, I'm the oldest of six children, so we were, you know, well known in the area, lots of involvement in sports and that sort of thing. And I think one of the things that that really helped me build that business was developing and delivering a really good quality personalized family like service, and really fostering really deep relationships with those clients. So that was something that, you know, was important to me, and it still is. And I think that's why I also have, you know, the reputation that I have, not just in coaching space now, but I have for all those years. And in relation to once I got a little bit bigger and I got offices, you know, and then getting a team and, you know, really making sure my team felt valued and appreciated, not just from myself, but from my clients.
Wow, I love that. And relationship, it seems to pop up a lot. That's so important, and both with your clients and, you know, your staff that are coming in.
Staff. Jodie, I say that, you know, we're not necessarily in the business of accounting and tax, bookkeeping. We really are in the business of building relationships, and really that's what a long-term business, the success of that is those long-term relationships. And, you know, it's playing the long game in a lot of instances, but it really does stand the test of time.
I love it. And grappling with GST, opening your business, that would have been a really tough one as well. Like, back then we were still learning so much about the starting of GST back in 2000.
It really was. Mm. And, you know, in a lot of those cases, Jodie, we actually had to help clients, you know, navigate this whole new system, but also getting computers. Many of them did not even own a computer. So when we were getting our little boxes of Purple MYOB delivered, we actually were often getting printers and computers for our clients. So it really was an opportunity for us to really get in and really work with those clients in a different way. And knowing that, like, I wasn't pregnant at the time when I started my practice, but I became pregnant fairly close after, you know, I knew I was also short, was going to be limited with time. So I felt really, really about that education piece. So instead of me doing everything for clients when GST comes, I know a lot of people rubbing their hands together, this is going to be all this extra money. Yes, I was doing the best, but I was actually educating my clients to actually use the software to do things on their own. And then I would, you know, when I had the baby, I'd go out and take the baby out and do the best while I was there, because we had to go to places, no cloud. And so we would go and do that. And, you know, that's also that relationship. I was taking a baby with me. Someone was nursing the baby while I was doing that. And it's really, it's come full circle that now I'm actually on the ATO GST stewardship group because I was there at the beginning. But, you know, things like that, yeah, just it's amazing how things happen.
And that takes me back a little bit, you know, sitting in clients' offices and all sorts of weird and wonderful places you go to get onto that computer, to get into the software and do the job.
Yeah.
But also that's a really good part of establishing your relationship, right? It's a lot of personal sort of touches there that sit.
It really was, and it just, you know, I embraced that change, and I guess it was good for my business. And, you know, it was really actually probably that, and, you know, just having those personal relationships, and that sort of grew, and that was really, like, there was so many people that needed help that they actually, when I actually did a really good job for someone, everyone spoke, and then I got, you know, another plumber, another electrician, another consultant, because people did talk and say, you know, whenever someone was confused, it was like, oh, well, my accountant comes to us, and, you know, and yeah, it was just like, it was that added service. Like, obviously I didn't do that all the time. You know, once yeah, you know, platforms changed, but I definitely did that at the beginning. So it was really good.
Yeah. And you had 18 years you stuck at that and built that practice. And there must have been a time when you decided that you wanted to change. All your kids had grown up probably by the sound of it.
Well, they hadn't actually grown up when they were sort of still at primary school. Look, I had a couple of coaches, a couple of accounting specific coaches, starting on, I think, about 2008. So about, yeah, maybe about 2008, I had a coach, and that was really great. And then after a while, I thought, I really would love to get into this coaching space. A lot of clients didn't actually see accountants as coaches. Like, we can actually do all this work, but they didn't actually see us. They just saw us more as the tax and financial statements. And I really, really thought I would love to do that. So, you know, in 2012, I actually registered a business called The Biz Buddy. I still have that. So it was all about, you know, helping SMEs, with resources and courses, helping them, run their businesses better. So I registered in 2012 with the hope that maybe in about 5 or 7 years' time I may have sold my practice. At that stage, that's when my children would have finished school. So I actually attended a seminar in Sydney, which was run by Michelle Knights from Rob Knights & Co., just to get a feel for what my practice would be worth, what I might need to do to maximise the price that I would get for that, and the rough time frames, you know, what's the lead-up time. So I think I'm a planner. I like to be organised and obviously like to optimise what I do. And I said about then, once I left there, I took my husband down to Sydney and we both sat in this seminar. And, you know, at the end of it, we looked at each other and said, that sounds pretty good. We could probably do that. And then I went home, crunched some numbers, and I was actually meeting all the metrics then. So I literally could have been sale ready. And as things happen, universe sends you funny messages, and someone actually came into my orbit, just having a chat to me. They were interested in acquiring an accounting practice. And so I prepared a prospectus, and my youngest brother was a partner of another practice. So I actually messaged him and said, would you mind just having a bit of a squeeze over my numbers? He is 13 years younger than me. And when I said that, he said, oh, I'd be interested in coming.
Wow.
And purchasing a practice, becoming a partner. I said, okay, well, let's hold off there. So then I went and saw a solicitor, and basically to make sure everything was all above board, I actually gave the prospectus to the solicitor, and they actually then distributed it to the two interested parties. I ended up deciding to sell to my brother, and he came on and we became business partners. So that was 2013, and we worked together for the next 4 years. So I did drop down my days so I could start focusing on the coaching, and then handed over the reins completely to him. So it's a beautiful story. It was really easy to do. There was no dramas with it. And some of my clients that I actually had in my previous employment who came with me, many of them are still with him. And I spoke to him this morning, and he said to me he saw someone earlier in this morning, and they said, "I'll make sure you say hello to Amanda when you speak to her next." He said, "Well, I'll be talking to her today because it's my daughter's birthday," and then he had another meeting this afternoon. So, like, you know, I think that really shows about those relationships too.
That is a beautiful story. I'm going to say beautiful because that is a really good story.
Really,
and just so, and also, you know, passing on, you know, the all your clients into that space, and how still being able to have conversations and say hi and all that sort of stuff is really good as well. It's so nice.
And I really, really, you know, they were like my, you know, like another, it is like
family.
Another family, you
know, family. Yeah.
Because I was sort of, you know, when I started the practice, 9 months later I had Callum, and then 14 months later I had Dempsey. So it was like I had three babies, and they do mean a lot to me. So, yeah, it's really lovely. They're in great hands, and
that's a
pop up there from time to time.
Great life experience, you know, that's enveloping your career, which is really great. I love it.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of more questions for you around, so you moved on, sold your practice, and, well, not really moved on, but just sold your practice, and you're still kind of involved a little bit because you like to obviously talk to your brother and
yeah.
keep things, you know, hand in things a little bit. But with your next phase, right, so
yes.
you've got clients coming to you, or people that are running their own practice coming to you.
Yeah.
What sort of themes do you see when you've got those clients coming to talk to you?
Look, I see a lot of themes, and, you know, they're not even that. Look, the themes are similar, whether someone's been in practice for 1 or 2 years, or even sometimes 10 and 15 years. So it's sort of they are across the board. And, you know, we are seeing a lot of practice owners not making enough money, not making the money that they should be, considering, you know, their skill level, their expertise, what they've got on the line. So we are seeing, you know, profitability being, you know, really reduced. They're overwhelmed, they're overworked, and this sees never ending deadlines. So they just do not seem to stop. And then on top of that, they've got client pressures. And I think, you know, particularly during COVID, like a lot of these issues, they were actually there before COVID, and I've talked about it and I've written about it. But COVID just seemed to exacerbate a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
But client pressures, you know, everyone wants something straight away, the immediacy of things. And even now with tax time, people are not, you know, they want these stuff to turn around so quickly. And if they haven't got it, they're ringing, you know. And when while people are taking these calls, they could be doing the work. So I think the immediacy, people are, you know, tend to be really, you know, not everyone, but there's a lot of people that are feeling really entitled and, you know, unappreciative of some of the work and what we do, which I think is really sad because, you know, as a profession, we were really, really well respected. And I think sometimes some of that actually has been lost a little bit. And, you know, one of the biggest things that I'm seeing is, you know, resistance to pay. And a lot of clients expect things to be done for nothing. But yet, you know, we're professionals, and there's this expectation that when they phone that they don't get charged for it, or you'll just do this for us for free, or isn't this included in a BAS, or isn't this included in a tax return? And I think that resistance to pay, we've got ever-changing legislation and just like more work to do. So the volume of work and the number of clients we've got to do is just huge. And with that, trying to attract and retain staff is actually getting harder. And even to retain staff, the cost to do that, and I think, you know, I always paid my staff very, very well, and I paid myself very, very well. But to do that, you need to be charging appropriately, and you need to have a profit model that gives that income. And I think that's what's actually, you know, people are getting really stretched. We've got to pay more for staff. We're paying more for all of our, you know, costs. We've got lots of subscriptions these days, which, you know, you'll hear me later. I love technology. But, you know, all these things cost money. And I think that we just need to actually then sort of step back and work out how we can actually make this stuff work, because people are complaining and, you know, that they don't have a lifestyle. They don't feel like they've got any choice. They're, you know, doing their best with their clients and they're making a difference, absolutely, in their clients' lives. But often that's at the expense of their own.
Yeah, and they're coming to you feeling stressed and going, I need to change
overwhelmed.
This. Yeah,
and
yeah.
A lot of people feel quite alone, and they often feel like they're the only ones experiencing this. Mm. But like I can tell you, all of those things that I've just described, they are, you know, experienced by a lot of people. And we also know, I read a study a couple of days ago in relation to burnout, and 99% of people in the accounting industry are suffering from some form of burnout. And that actually has a really disastrous effect, because it's actually one of the main reasons why people exit our industry. And that's something that I don't want to see, but they're exiting and doing something completely different.
Yeah, and if they're seeing, if people are seeing that as well, you know, it's the perception that, you know, people coming into the industry as well are receiving, which we don't want, right? We don't want a great perception, that because it is a good it is a good career,
it's a great career.
Yeah, and one of the things I think, and we'll obviously touch on this because I think you're the expert here, but it's resetting those expectations and really sort of taking a step back, making that first move to actually go, hey, I'm putting my hand up. This is actually pretty tough, and making that first move. So
absolutely.
So you can tell me more about that. So, you know, when those people are coming to you, what can you help them with? And setting those foundations back, I think, rebuilding,
it's a bit of a reboot or a reset. And I think, you know, you can do that at any time. You know, we can actually do things at any time. And I think one of the things that I talk about, the five components, so to get that sweet spot, it is very different for every single business. And I think that's what we often think, that version of success looks something like someone else is achieving. And I think, you know, we've really got to sit back and say, okay, what does success look like for us? What is our vision for our practice and our life? And get really, really clear on that. And once we know that, it can help us create boundaries, create, you know, what we want for our practice. And I think without that, we are pretty much flying blind. So knowing what that practice vision looks like, and I talk about like designing or redesigning a practice. So if it's someone new coming in, design it how you want. If you only want to work 4 days a week, let's make it work with 4 days a week. If you only want to work school holidays, let's do it. I did that. And we work 4.5 days in our office. So like getting really clear on that and not apologizing to anyone about your vision and then making it all work, because what will happen, which leads on to the next thing, which is about clients, the ideal clients will actually be attracted to that, because they may think, I'd like to do what Amanda's doing. I'd like to do what Jodie's doing. I'm going to work with her because, you know, that's what I
She's
want.
She's got the secret.
Yeah, you know. And so I think, you know, from a leadership point of view, if we're only working 4 days a week or 4.5 days a week, often we might think that our clients would think, oh, they're making a fortune. That's why they don't need to come in 4 days a week. And it's like, no, we want to actually spend time maybe on a hobby or doing stuff with our kids, you know. So I think that's about really being clear on those, that vision, and then making everything fit around that. So who are your ideal clients? And, you know, we've got so many clients often. I think we've got too many. We need to actually remove a few from our client list so we can actually focus on those better ones and the ones that are ideal for us. And then from there, making sure we're offering the right services and pricing it appropriately. So, you know, we've got so much variation in prices, but we don't know what the level of service someone else is offering. So we might be thinking, well, someone over there is only charging this. I've got to charge that. Not realizing that, you know, that what we value is relationships, communication, that more hand-holding. So therefore, our pricing needs to be different to someone over there. So I think we need to work out that and price accordingly. And, you know,
Having that good relationship with your client too helps you to scope out sort of work that you're going to be doing with them, right, as well, which helps you price out those sort of jobs and
definitely
things as well.
And clients are prepared to pay for quality.
Yes.
You know, we know that, you know, you can go and buy a handbag somewhere, buy one, you know, for $20, or we can go and pay $2,000 over here. People are still doing both.
Yes.
But it's what they value. And I think especially now as we're getting more AI and we're getting a lot more technology, people actually crave that human connection. We missed it during COVID, and people will pay to get good quality relationships, good quality advice. So I again don't apologize for that, and I think that actually can be a real superpower. And then the fourth thing about is creating and nurturing a really wonderful practice culture. And when I talk about culture, people might say, well, I'm on my own, I don't even have staff. But I think culture in your practice extends beyond a team. It is actually also about the clients you work with and the colleagues that you work with. So I think that whole culture is something that we do need to manage, whether we've got staff or not.
Wrapping that up, and then also your work-life balance comes into that, like
And that
just being able
work-life
to,
balance.
yeah, having that as well, which is really important.
And that's what people are wanting, and then the last one is all about, which you'll love, is all about embracing technology. Technology is your friend. I went paperless in 2008, which was really, really early, and I had a full document management system, and that was the best $20,000 I could ever have spent, which sounds a lot of money, and it was. But all of those things, I have been an early adopter of technology, and I encourage practice owners and their clients to embrace it as well, because it really was one of the kickers for me to be as successful as I was.
Fantastic. You bought the expensive handbag, but it's still got that zipper that
Yeah,
works really well, right?
absolutely.
An analogy. You got to love an analogy.
Yeah.
I mean, we could keep talking. I love all this sort of stuff, but I mean, is a bigger practice better? Like, there's always these,
I
we've got these
know.
people out here that are sole practitioners. There's top tier firms. What's your story in that space?
Yeah. Well, look, I can speak from experience from what I did. Like, I literally was chasing that million-dollar practice, and I did everything that I possibly could. I had the coaches, I had the technology, I had all the pricing right. And I pretty much got there, and I was burnt out. And what I realized is all these things that I was doing for my family, because I was the breadwinner in my family, and the primary breadwinner. And I was chasing something for us, but I was actually losing the importance of, I wasn't there. I was,
Life,
getting up at 4 a.m. in the morning. Like, I was there, and I do really like it, but to be there meant that I was getting up at 4 a.m. every morning to do the reviewing for the next day, because I'd never worked when I got home of an evening. So we always had dinner, did stuff with the kids, I watched TV, and then I would get up at 4 in the morning. So I would get that and do that. And that is not sustainable. But so
No.
I actually did scale back my practice. So when I sold it, it certainly wasn't a million-dollar practice. But I had, shaved a little bit off it, but I was actually making more money. So from my perspective, that actually was mine. I had very, small children, and I really, one of our reasons for setting up the practice was to actually have that family time. So I think that's from experience, but I work with clients whether they, just want a couple of $100,000 practice or otherwise over the million. So I do work with both. And there are very different very different drivers, and people are different stages of their practice journey. But I really can see, and my prediction is that we're going to see a lot more smaller boutique firms, people that are deciding to stay, like making a conscious decision to stay small, and having the time of their lives. They can be here, they can be there, they can be traveling, they don't need to worry about staff, or they might have a remote staff, they can be working, from Noosa, they can be working for snow. And I really think that we go into practice to get more money, more freedom, more flexibility. And I think that model can actually work really, really well. So I'm making a bit of a prediction that I think that we will see a lot more smaller practices that really have that beautiful relationship with their clients. And yeah, so that's what I think.
I think there's a
And
lot,
it's beautiful. You can make really good money.
yeah, and there's a lot to be said about taking your clients and going through that process and seeing the success they can have. I think that's a really nice feeling as well. Like you've been part of it and you've been on the journey, which is a really nice feeling as well. It's a good, that's that you know, it's not so much ambition. It's more just giving back, you know, like that sort of feeling, which is really nice as well.
And it's also the model I use right now, Jody. Like I can be like this week, it's a 3-day work week for me. I usually do 4, but this week I'm working 3 and I'm jamming everything in. So I'm going to Brisbane tomorrow for a lunch on Friday. I do a lot of work with the ATO. I do stuff with chartered accountants. Like some of that time takes my time out. I could have, I could actually double the number of actual clients that I have, but that would not give me all the joy of all the other things that I do. So I've made a conscious decision, but my model ensures that I am making enough money doing all of that, and the extra that I could make isn't sufficient to warrant me losing those other things.
And I can see by the smile on your face that you are really enjoying that, and that's a really important part as well, right? You walk away with a smile on your face at the end of the day. That's fantastic.
Absolutely.
And it's a wonderful smile too, by the way.
Thanks. Thank you.
For all the listeners out there, just sharing that with you. Okay, so you've got this consulting, you know, you're busy, you're ATO, you're traveling, you're meeting, you know, you're right in that sort of industry base and really enjoying it. And I love that. So what is the end goal for you though? Like what, you know, do you still have sort of ambition or do you think you've met it and you're really quite happy?
No, I think, you know, there's definitely, I've still got lots of ambitions to do in a couple of weeks' time. I'm actually doing the Australian Company Directors course. You know, it's something that I would like to do more of that down the track. So I don't see myself not coaching, mentoring I feel I'm going to be doing that for quite some time. I really do love it. I love making a difference and I love seeing the smiles on my clients' face when they've, you know, achieved amazing things. But there's always things to learn. There's always other areas where you can direct your energy. So whilst the coaching and mentoring is definitely going to be there for a while, I see, you know, we know that we need, more female representation on boards. Being a chartered accountant, you know, the financial acumen is something that, really is also something that's really, sought after.
Yep.
And I think, you know, my perspective on life actually is going to be another thing that's going to bring all those things together because, you know, whilst, you know, driven by financially being free, but it's also about having that balance. And I've always been like that from the day I started that practice and what I do now. So it's really that lovely, you know, holistic look of things. So we're looking at and getting that balance between, you know, profit and purpose and all those sorts of things. So I think that perspective and the importance of family and things that are dear to me, I think I can actually really bring a really, nice mix to a board. So I'm doing that. So that's one of the things that I'm doing over the next month or so. And then I'll just keep my eye out. And again, that long game, I'm certainly not going to be going and applying for, you know, board positions the minute I get the qualification. I'll be waiting for something that appeals to me, and whether that's 12 months time, 2 years time, that doesn't matter. But once I've got the qualification, I've set myself up for success in that area.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
Continuous learning, continuous improvement, and, you know, just that love of wanting to share it as well. I love all those messages that you've got. It's wonderful.
Mm.
Amanda,
oh, thanks,
what a lovely conversation. Listen, I think we need to wind up. I could sit here actually and talk to you all day. I think it's just wonderful. I do have one more question for you.
Yes.
And it is what we call a little bit of fiscal therapy time, right?
Mm.
So, and we all love a little bit of therapy and, you know, just taking that deep breath and having a chance to think about things, you know, that really mean something to you. So, Amanda, take a seat, lie back on your virtual couch, think some really good thoughts, and I'm going to ask you this question. What is the sweet secret to your success? After all the things we've talked about?
Well, look, I think, you know, it's a combination of a few things. Definitely hard work. Like I have worked really hard for what I've achieved. It is that continuous learning. And I think it's not just about learning stuff, just about accounting. I have taken a lot of the things that I actually use in my life and in my business from all industries. So I really love getting different perspectives and then melding them all together. And, you know, finally, I think it is just really building and nurturing, you know, authentic and meaningful relationships. That really is important to me. And, you know, family is everything. And, you know, and a lot of my clients and colleagues really are like family.
Wonderful.
And that's why I think that's relationships, yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. That's wonderful. Listen, Amanda, if people want to get in touch with you, tell us, how can they do that?
Yeah, well, they can get in touch with me heading to my website, amandagascoigne.com. And for more information about my community for small and solo accounting practice owners, The Balanced Firm, head over to thebalancedfirm.com.
They could probably also find you on LinkedIn.
Also, you can find me on all the social media channels, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. I'd really love to connect with, more and more small and solo accounting practice owners that really want to have a better practice and a better life.
I love that. Thank you, Amanda, so much. So thanks for joining us today and sharing your story with us. It's really empowering to hear that it's possible to build a successful practice, still have that flexibility and balance in your life. So I really appreciate that you've shared that with us, and thanks again.
Thanks for having me. See you soon, Jody.
Certainly will. Thank you, Amanda. You've been listening to Fiscal Therapy with Jody Sitters, powered by MYOB. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to sharing more fiscal therapy with you next time.